This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on April 25th, 2013. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
We can go to the other AO, or we can go to the ANPRM. I guess we can, since there are probably more people here who are interested in the other AO, why don't we do the AO first? So the next item on the agenda, and we have already, even before it appeared before us, approved consideration of the late submitted document, is Advisory Opinion 2012-38, Socialist Workers Party, Draft C is the new document. Ms. Hayden. No, I'm sorry. Ms. Hemsley.
I'll tell her you were thinking of her.
I was thinking of her, yes. I looked down and I saw her name, and then I looked up and I said, but that's not her.
After you said the name.
You didn't look up.
Well, sorry. That's not you.
I'd like to say that's not the only person who's ever given me that reaction, Commissioner, but this is not true. So.
My apologies, Ms. Hemsley.
Thank you, Chair Weintraub. Good morning, everyone. Before you in agenda documents 1307 and 1307-A are three draft advisory opinions responding to a request submitted by the Socialist Workers Party asking the Commission to again grant it a partial reporting exemption. Agenda document 1307 contains drafts A and B, which were submitted for the February 14, 2013 open session, but were held over at the request of the SWP. Draft A would grant the SWP's request for a partial reporting exemption until December 31st, 2015, Draft B would deny the request. Agenda document 1307-A also would grant the partial reporting exemption, but contains revisions to Draft A, including extending the exemption until December 31st, 2016. We received two comments on Drafts A and B, including one from the SWP. Both the commenters were in favor of granting the exemption, and should the Commission approve an advisory opinion, Madam Chair, we request authority to make technical and conforming amendments as necessary. Thank you. We'd be happy to answer questions.
And considering that we were working on the document up until and including after the meeting started, I think that would be a very prudent suggestion that we include technical and conforming amendments. Do we have any, we have counsel in the room if anybody wants to ask them questions. Do we have any questions for our counsel, the requester's counsel, or discussion? Commissioner Walther.
I have questions for counsel.
Okay, come on down.
Good morning.
Good morning. I should start off by saying I was I did not vote in favor of the extension last time, and I just have some questions, if you don't mind helping me out a little bit.
Of course.
My thoughts are pretty much aligned with before, but I want to ask you a couple of questions, if I could, about there are a number of other socialist parties that were filed with us for which they've not sought exemption. And I was wondering if you could identify the tenets of the Socialist Worker Party, the requester here, that are principal ones that you feel, or your client feels, are the ones that raise a risk of harassment by either the government or other persons or persons. Is it the tenets that they are currently espoused by the Socialist Workers Party? Is it the history principally, or how do you view the danger at this point to a contributor?
Well, the danger. Good morning, Commissioner, and thank you for your question. Thank you for hearing us. The danger does not come from the tenets of the SWP. The danger comes from, under the Supreme Court precedent, the history of threats, harassment, or reprisals of the SWP combined with the current record of threats, harassments, or reprisals that have been presented to the Commission in the intervening 4 years since the last exemption was granted. The tenants themselves do not play a role in the analysis, as far as I understand the reading of the Supreme Court case law and federal court case law, as well as the Commission's own series of advisory opinions on this matter. The tenets of the SWP have been consistent since the 1930s, and you know, have been well known within the population to whom they solicit, to the public, to whom they seek support. But I do not believe that the difference between their tenets and the tenets of other socialist organizations or any other political organizations plays a relevant role in the analysis.
Well, if you humor me a little bit on this, is it the view that it's the history that occurred at the outset where there was a strong negative reaction to some aspect of the Socialist Workers' Party that continues to emanate and cause the same kind of issue? Or certainly if an entity can and decides to change its views on issues, the risk may vary up or down. I mean, you can see now, for example, there's a load of highly negative comments coming out as a result of the gun control litigation issue, not litigation now, but there's one here that says lawmakers get violent emails over gun control. And so I think in terms of balancing, at least to me, when there is a probability of a risk, we have to take into consideration what is being done to perhaps create that risk. As it, if the tenants are exactly the same as they were before, let me ask you: There's not been really a discussion of it before, but they were raised in your letter as being not in the mainstream. There were two issues, as I recall. So that's what caught my eye as to the fact that they haven't really had a discussion on it, but it was brought up in your letter. It says, for more than 80 years, both the SWP and the militant have openly called for the establishment of a workers' and farmers' government that will abolish capitalism in the United States and join in the worldwide struggle for socialism. The last hearing we had, we pointed out there was a number of articles, there's even more now, about the fact that socialism is increasingly being discussed in many, many parts of the world, even in our country. Is that a tenet that you contend is out of the mainstream at this point?
Well, I believe two points. One is we believe that debates such as Proposition 8 in California, the gun control debate, and any kind of attempt to draw analogies between those types of situations and the situation of the SWP and other minor political parties is misguided, because the gun control debate, Proposition 8 debate, is a debate. Proposition 8 gained more than 7 million votes in California. It drew millions upon millions of dollars of support. It was clearly not a debate that could be characterized as representing a minor party or any kind of view that's outside of the mainstream. If you juxtapose that with the tenets that you described, in which we presented in our supplemental submission, you can really see the contrast. And when the Supreme Court put forth the exception to the FICA requirements for minor parties, they're really focusing on that. And all of the cases that we've seen, including the cases that deal with the Proposition 8, make clear and explicit exceptions for parties like, and in fact naming, the Socialist Workers' Party as a party to whom their analysis does not apply. And that's because three central reasons, the analysis that the Commission itself has gone through, that the SWP has a long history of harassment, violence conducted against government surveillance, in addition to continuing acts. The second point, which is to address your question maybe a little bit more directly, is that the tenets, as I understand them, of the Socialist Workers' Party have remained essentially the same for more than 75 years. And so on the basis of the history of violence, the well-known history of harassment and violence, the well-known stance that the SWP takes, that's what causes these acts of, that's what continues to cause these acts of harassment and reprisal.
So, but the two points that you make, is then the other one is the call for immediate and unconditional withdrawal of all U.S. military forces from Afghanistan, Korea, Guantanamo, naval base in the Pacific, Atlantic, and other oceans, and elsewhere in the world, is the second tenet that you mentioned as being out of the mainstream, as if they were in the mainstream, our analysis could be different. So I raise those for your response. You've already got the votes here, but I did want to dry out and ask you some questions.
Sure. And the question specifically is whether or not if the SWP becomes part of the mainstream, if somehow this analysis changes.
Well, you do say these are hardly mainstream positions, as is evident from both the name and content of every issue of the Militant Newsweekly, as well as policies of the Socialist Worker Party itself, as if that was a point that's being raised to support the contention that an exemption is appropriate in this case.
Now, this point was raised.
Do you understand that?
Yeah, this point was raised to address an issue raised in draft B, to the advisory opinion, which had dropped a footnote stating that the SWP represents mainstream viewpoints. Because it contains viewpoints of national issues and provides news coverage well within the scope of the national debate. What we had attempted to do in this part of the comments was to demonstrate how clearly unique the SWP's political stance, their positions are, and how different they are from the parties, the main political parties in the United States. That's what we were attempting to do in that part of our comments.
Let me ask you, we have on our records entities called the Freedom Socialist 2012 Presidential Campaign Committee, Democratic Socialists of America, Inc., Socialist National Committee, which is National Party Committee. But in all three instances, there's been no request for an exemption. What separates the Socialist Workers' Party from those entities, if you feel there is a separation in terms of the entitlement to an exemption?
I can't speak to those particular entities because I don't know their history when they were formed, what kinds of records of harassment they have, whether any of that information has ever been public. I will say that the SWP has presented substantial evidence of their own history of harassment, threats and reprisals, both from government parties and from private parties. I can't speak to the difference between other political organizations and the Socialist Workers' Party. But the Supreme Court case law doesn't require any particular party to compare themselves to others. They can compare themselves to others if they're a newly formed party and they're trying to find a basis for exemption. They can compare their situation to a party that has similar views and has experienced harassment. So if these are newer, any new political party might want to compare themselves to the SWP, but any one party does not have an obligation to distinguish themselves or compare themselves to to any other party that has the word socialism in their name or espouses similar ideas.
Let me just mention, it seems to me there seems to be maybe a little more, and I can't tell any degree if it's the case or not, but comments by the members of the Supreme Court on the issue of the importance of disclosure to our system, especially in view of Citizens United, where all sorts of new considerations have arisen for all of us. But we have Justice Sotomayor, Justice Stevens, Justice Ginsburg all saying that in rare circumstances in which disclosure poses a reasonable probability, not a possibility, of serious and widespread harassment that the state is unwilling or unable to control. Would you agree with that as a standard to consider when we determine whether an exemption is appropriate?
I would not consider it appropriate.
And it's only three justices.
I would not consider it appropriate in the context of the SWP for the reason that Citizens United did not address a situation of a minor party. For minor parties, the Supreme Court has been consistent and uniform in their analysis. Serious evidence of serious instances of threats, harassment, or violence have never been required. The Supreme Court may at some future point develop a different standard for situations such as Prop 8 or gun control debate, which is a debate where there is massive support, a public debate that involves millions of people and millions of dollars, and maybe there's a different standard that the Supreme Court will ultimately apply in that context. But in this context, the context of the SWP and other minor parties, I do not believe that that's relevant now, and should not be considered, at least at this moment, by the Commission going forward, barring some change in the case law.
I appreciate your comments. I have a couple more questions, and then we'll get off it. But I just wanted to give a quote of Justice Scalia, because there's almost five votes at this point. But he says, requiring people to stand up in public for their political acts fosters civic courage, without which democracy is doomed. For my part, I do not look forward to a society which, thanks to the Supreme Court, campaigns anonymously and even exercises the direct democracy of initiative and referendum, hidden from public scrutiny and protected from the accountability of criticism. And then he says, the fact is that running a democracy takes a certain amount of civic courage, and the First Amendment does not protect you from criticism or even nasty phone calls when you exercise your political right to legislate or take part in the legislative process. And I'm sure you know all about those phrases, but in my mind, it does, I think, these recent statements cause us to take a look at what was really being thought about, as opposed to an entity that, 50 or 70 years ago engaged in conduct that was anathema then, when there's very few people that remember much about it now. I do remember quite a bit, but not 70 years back. I have one more question. In your affidavit, there's a declaration about disclosure in the militant about some people who then wanted you to take it off the online edition of the militant. Can you tell me what the situation was there?
In what respect?
Well, it says, it's from the editor, in the last 5 years since the beginning of 2008, I am familiar with at least five instances where individuals have been quoted in articles in the military posted online, accurately and with their names cited, who have written to the paper to say they have encountered difficulty in getting and maintaining a job because employers have found their quotes in the militant when searching their names on the Internet. And are you familiar with those instances?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, what struck me when we look at this is, you have the militant just actually disclosing the names of people ostensibly favorable to the tenets in which the militant is writing, and they're not even asking, apparently, the person in advance whether they mind having their names disclosed.
Well, In the context, I understand, in the context of the militant, they might not necessarily be persons who are supportive of the militant or the SWP, but people who are quoted in an article included in the militant And even including their names in an article in The Militant, which editorially supports the SWP, has subjected you know, at least those five individuals to the kind of harassment and discrimination and employment described in the affidavit. So I'm not sure exactly how much more information you need on.
Well, it seems somewhat inconsistent for to make the proposition that the people who make donations do not have to have their name disclosed, when they have the right in advance to decide whether or not that's so. But at the same time, the Socialist Workers Party, through the Militant, is apparently just disclosing people's names, knowing that there's a potential risk of harassment occurring to those people.
Well, they're not. Every person quoted in the Militant is not necessarily a member or a financial supporter of the Militant. And so the fact that someone chooses to publicly, in any event, even if someone chooses to publicly associate themselves with the SWP, the fact that when they do so, they're being subjected to harassment, employment harassment, employment, negative employment situations, not getting jobs, not getting fired, is, in our view, substantial evidence to support the finding that there's a reasonable probability that other persons, financial supporters of the SWP, will also be subjected to the similar kinds of threats, harassment, and reprisals if their names do become public. So the fact that some people choose to be quoted in an article in the Militant or choose to publicly associate themselves with the SWP shouldn't be taken as evidence that somehow the SWP should not be allowed exemption.
Well, in both of the instances you mentioned, they are either inviting and associating themselves with the Militant, or making statements to the Militant, knowing they might be quoted. But that is not the case here. These are instances in which people have been quoted for whatever reason, and these people apparently had no idea they were being quoted or were going to have any way of being associated with the Militant. But yet the Militant puts them out into the open in a way that they apparently can predict for the last 5 years might cause them harassment.
Well, they knew that they were going to be quoted in the Militant. As with any journalistic enterprise, they're informed that they'll be quoted.
Well, that's inconsistent with these affidavits who say they want their name off the
online version,
yeah,
of the Militant.
Well, the press is out. I mean, the press part is already out, so there's nothing they can do about that.
Right, but there's a distinction that they didn't know. The one of the points is that in this day and age, where employers can, it's not so easy for an employer to search every edition of the printed Militant when they're going to hire an employee or when they're determining whether or not to punish in some way an employee. You can't, many employers might not have access to the Militant, but they can type that employee's name into Google. And if that employee's name appears in the Militant online, in some instances, employees have been subject to negative work situations.
So that's a distinction that you draw, is that these people are giving basically consent to be quoted in a written copy of the Militant, but not the online version?
That's correct. Okay. Not that they're not giving consent, that they might not necessarily know that the consent to be quoted in an article includes not only a print version of the newspaper, but also an online version.
Well, I want to thank you for your participation here and staying with me on the questions. I appreciate it a lot.
No, thank you very much, yeah, Commissioner.
Are there further questions or comments? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you. Just to respond briefly to that, even if you have some members or contributors, for our purposes, contributors, because you don't put members on your reports, who are quoted in an article and identified as members of the party, that doesn't affect all the other folks who give money who may not want to be known or for whatever reason feel that they may suffer reprisal of some form. So I understand there's a tension if someone's in a newspaper article but yet claiming that they don't want anyone to know who they are. But I don't see that as what you're arguing. It just, to me, doesn't affect everyone else in the mix. Draft C just came out, and apologize for the lateness. It's similar to other drafts that have been public. I think the goal was to, given that the commission has already issued a number of advisory opinions, streamline this one a little bit. So we took, I think, the less is more approach. Some of the edits, I think, also included some additional facts, and this has been a rather evolving process to make sure we get the facts correct. And I hate to put you on the spot, but part of why we put in the ability of counsel to appear is because occasionally we'd have late, not occasionally, usually there's the documents are not publicly available a week before because the deliberation really can't occur until we get to an open meeting. So we put it out. It's a late document. We hope we got it right, but in the event we didn't and you've had a chance to skim it, please feel free to speak up and say, wait, you got something wrong here. But I think the intent was not to hide this from you, but to get it right. The third change from some of the earlier drafts, I think only gave the exemption through the end of 2015, which to me didn't make a lot of sense. It made sense to do it for the whole election cycle 2016, because I can't imagine back in the middle of an election cycle and doing this again. And then if the commission changes its mind, you all of a sudden have to start filing reports in the middle of an election cycle. That just doesn't really work when you take a look at the fact that some of the reporting is tied to sort of election cycle to date kind of numbers. So I don't really have any questions for you other than an open, sort of a general question, last opportunity to comment on existing drafts, but I think there's going to be sufficient support for draft C, but any other drafts, and it's just kind of a catch-all, this is your chance to correct the record and see if we got anything glaringly wrong before we do something that we might have to fix.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I have not. I was just handed a draft C while sitting at the table here, and so have not had a chance to review it in any manner. But in terms of comments on draft A and B, I believe the SWP was thankfully allowed sufficient time to prepare all of its comments on drafts A and B, and thank the Commission as well as the Office of General Counsel for being flexible in that respect.
Thank you. The idea C was to reflect all that,
yeah,
and roll it in. So hopefully
that's very much appreciated.
Hopefully we've done that.
Yes.
I other than a little bit of additional information that was drawn from your comment, I don't think there are any other changes to the facts in draft C. For myself, I share many of my colleagues' concerns about the importance of disclosure, and I agree with all the quotes from various justices that Commissioner Walther read, but I do think that the Socialist Workers Party occupies really a unique place in American history and has a long history that we have to be cognizant of. In addition to this long history of harassment and threats of violence, the Commission has a balancing test under the court decisions. The Commission must weigh the danger of violence or harassment or threats of violence or harassment directed at the SWP or its supporters against the governmental interest in obtaining identifying information of contributors and recipients of expenditures. And When I look at the SWP and the facts that have been presented, offered a presidential candidate in every election since 1948 and numerous other candidates for federal, state, and local offices, and yet no SWP candidate has ever been elected to public office in a partisan election. Sorry. Data from elections in 2009 to 2012 show very low vote totals for SWP presidential and other federal candidates. Doesn't look like the SWP candidates played the role of a spoiler in any particular election, really have very limited impact on the on any election in history, as far as we can tell. In addition, information provided by the party indicates that the SWP and its committees and committees supporting its candidates receive very small total amounts of contributions and very low vote totals in partisan elections. Party received only $1,222 from 2009 to 2011 and only approximately $15,500 in 2012. Only 118 people contributed to the committee in 2012, which was even fewer than the 243 people who contributed in 2008, which is what we had before us last time. So the information that is being lost to the public is very, very, very small. There is very little electoral impact of these activities, and there is this long history of harassment and violence. And when I put all those together and do the balance, I think that I come out in favor of what we now have as draft C, despite what I think is a pretty strong record in favor of disclosure. I, as I said when I started, I think you guys are somewhat unique. So I will be prepared to support draft C with technical and conforming amendments should a motion be offered. Mr. Vice Chairman.
I move adoption of draft C.
The Vice Chairman has moved adoption of draft C, a response to AO 2012-38 to the request of the Socialist Workers Parties as set forth in agenda document number 1307-A, and I understand his motion to include direction to council to do any technical and conforming edits that are necessary.
If I didn't say that out loud, I thought it.
I know you did. Yes. I know you did.
Yes, that's part of the motion.
And we all know how good I am at reading your mind, Mr. Vice Chairman. So.
I am predictable.
Not always. So that is the motion. Does anybody have any questions or discussions on the motion? I will call the question. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes 4-1 with the Vice Chairman, Commissioners Hunter Peterson, and myself voting in favor, and Commissioner Walther voting against. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you.